Tomorrow is an important anniversary. September 11th is one of those days that is burned into our memories and probably always will be. I suppose we all remember where we were and what we were doing on September 11th, 2001, 5 years ago. I hope that as the years pass, we will continue to celebrate the legacy of courage displayed by so many on that day. Just as important, though, is the legacy of compassion that we are still creating for those who lost loved ones and family members and friends and jobs and hope. I think I've told you before the story of my friend, Mary White. If so, I'm going to tell you again. It's a fairly brief story. I've worked with Mary for several years. She and I have traveled the country together. She lives in Philadelphia and works in the office of the United Methodist Bishop there. Mary is a tall, distinguished, articulate black woman. She has a PhD in nuclear physics, but she works in the bishop's office. Her son, she told me, worked in the World Trade Center, and he was at work on the morning of September 11th. The long day ended, and she did not hear from him. But she said, "I knew my son was alive." She checked with family and friends and neighbors where he lived late that night. They had not seen him or heard from him either. But she said, "I knew my son was alive." The next morning, still no word. But she said again, "I knew my son was alive." And she headed for New York City. She said she started on the train, but she didn't know how she got into the city because transportation and communications were still shut down on the morning of September 12th. Most of the way, she said, she walked across the bridge and into the city. And from there, she went from hospital to hospital to hospital. And she walked every floor. And she looked into every room. And she did so all day until late that night, after it was dark, she found her son. He was indeed alive, though badly injured. And he recovered and returned home eventually. What would the world be like if we could be that persistent in loving one another? What would the world be like if we could be every day so devoted to caring for each other that we wouldn't let anything come between us or get in the way? What would the world be like if we could be so compassionate for each other that the compassion that we have for those who suffered losses on September 11th could last 5 years and beyond 5 years? The importance of those questions is underscored in Mark's gospel, in those two stories of healing that I just read for you. The seventh chapter of Mark has two distinct parts. In the first part of the chapter, which we read last Sunday, in the first part, you'll remember, the Pharisees challenged Jesus because of the way his disciples were eating. They were hungry and they began to eat without first washing their hands in the ritually prescribed manner. Well, Jesus' response to them was not a kind one. He called them hypocrites. He said, "You honor God with your lips, but your hearts are far from him." So in the first part of Mark's seventh chapter is that incident where Jesus is called to account for his disciples' ritual violation and their behavior. And then in the second part of Mark's seventh chapter are these two stories of healing. First, there is a foreign woman who intercedes for her daughter. She came and bowed down at his feet, Mark tells us, and begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. She was persistent in her conversation with Jesus and in her request. She would not be ignored or put off by him. And her daughter received the attention she needed from Jesus, and she was healed of her disease. Then there was a deaf man who was brought to Jesus. There were others interceding for him because, it says, they begged him to lay his hand upon him. He too received the healing that he needed from Jesus. When you read the Bible, please be aware that there is meaning and message not only in the stories themselves, but in the structure of the gospel, in the ways that the stories and the narrative is put together. There's a message in that too, in the way that the story is told. And that is certainly the case here in the seventh chapter of Mark. Mark, in telling the Jesus story, is trying to open our minds to a particular lesson, a particular important matter, just in the way he's telling the story. In the first part of the seventh chapter, Jesus was unable to have any impact on the lives of those Pharisees. But in the second half of the chapter, he was able to have a remarkable, miraculous impact on the lives of two people who were brought to him. And Mark concludes the narrative by saying they were astounded beyond measure at what Jesus was able to do. They were astounded beyond measure, and they said, "He does everything well." So, what was the difference between those whom Jesus was unable to help and those that he was able to minister to? What was it that made the difference in them? Jesus was able to have a miraculous impact on some, but no impact on the others. It's not difficult. It really is quite simple. Those whom Jesus was able to help were those who admitted that they had a need. They came to him. They knelt before him in their pain, in their brokenness, in their fear, in their need, and they asked for his help. And the result was nothing less than miraculous. So overwhelming was the result of Jesus' ministry to them that they couldn't contain themselves. And it's a bit humorous the way Mark tells us Jesus ordered them to tell no one about what had happened, but he says, the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. So moved, so transformed they were, they just could not keep it to themselves what Jesus was able to do. On the other hand, the Pharisees were never able to admit their needs, never able to acknowledge their weaknesses, their faults, never able to recognize their own brokenness. And for them, there was no healing, no help, no salvation. And the destructiveness of their life continued to increase. The desperateness of their plight deepens until finally they become the epitome of evil, arranging and promoting the execution of the Son of God. All of this because they were unable to look within themselves and see who and what they were. They honored God with their lips, but their hearts were far away. It is our calling, my friends, our calling to be open and honest with each other. To admit to one another our shortcomings and our needs, to ask each other to pray for us, to help us, to forgive us. For if we are able to do so, if we take that sometimes difficult but always courageous step, the ways that God is able to work with us and within us are miraculous, transforming. But if we continue in any pretense, as did the Pharisees, then we become complicit in the horrors of evil that work their ways in our world. An important lesson for us to understand as we approach September 11th. If we continue in any pretense, we become complicit in the horrors of evil working their ways in our world. One of the most unbearable tragedies of life in the church, as wonderful as you are and as good as it is, one of the most unbearable tragedies is that we put on such pretense with each other. We dress ourselves up and polish ourselves up so nicely when we come here, and we try as best we can to shield and to cover up and to deny the brokenness and the pain and the disappointment and the fear that we all share. Every one of us does. And we all know it. But we pretend with each other. And if we're pretending with each other, my friends, it is highly likely we're pretending with God too. And pretending that all is well, and that we're just fine, and we're not. One of the blessings, if there are any, one of the blessings of September 11th was that it pulled the cover off of all of that. And we could not pretend on that day, and with the memory of those events, that all is well, and that we are not hurt and devastated and broken. A number of years ago when I was serving one of those lesser churches that I served before I came here, we had a group of about 15 of us who met in training for Stephen Ministry, and we were learning how to be helpful to each other and in times of need. That's what Stephen ministers do. One evening as we gathered, our leader said, when we begin tonight, I want to do something a little different. We always began with prayer, but he said, I want to begin our prayer time a little different. We usually talk about what the needs are in the congregation that we're aware of, but he said, I don't want to do that tonight. Tonight, I want us to talk about our own needs and what's going on with us and how we are hurting and how we are broken and how we are in pain. And he was a little bit tentative about trying that, but he talked himself into it, and so we did. And it took us quite a long time to work our way around the table that night and take the cover off and the masks away and talk about who we were. And then at the end of it all, he said, isn't it remarkable that in a congregation this size, we have randomly chosen only the people who have needs and hurts and pain and gathered them around this table? Or is it possible that what we have heard tonight is really the common experience of everyone here? And we spend all our time pretending with each other and not talking about it, putting on airs that all is okay and that we are just fine. Well, on September 11th, we can't pretend that everything is just fine. And it ought to be that way every day for us, because there's always those among us who are feeling their brokenness and the pain of life. And the message of the gospel is that when we are able to look at ourselves and to admit who we are and what we suffer, then it's then that Jesus can transform us and work miraculously in us and in our lives. But if we pretend that everything's okay, then we become complicit in the work of evil that is overtaking our world and destroying it. As we approach this anniversary tomorrow, I encourage you to take that tragedy and do something to redeem it. Do something to make it valuable. Do something that causes some good to come from it and not just destruction and evil. Look to Christ. Look to each other. And begin to confess who you really are and how you really are broken and how there really is pain and disappointment in your life. Because I remind you, that is a common experience among us all. We don't need to hide it from each other. And that is the way, my friends, the way that we must travel to receive the gifts that Christ has for us. The gifts that are sometimes physical, but always spiritual. Offering yourself, opening yourself to the Christ who seeks to transform you. Pretending that we don't need anything, pretending that we're independent and self-sufficient, is the first step on the road to destruction that the Pharisees traveled. Pretending that we have all the right things, all the right answers, and all the right values is the first step to a new September 11th. I found a poem that was anonymously written, but it says something that I think Jesus himself might say to us were he walking with us today. Listen to these words, written undoubtedly by someone who was in New York City 5 years ago tomorrow. As the soot and dirt and ash rained down, we became one color. As we carried each other down the stairs of the burning building, we became one class. As we lit candles of waiting and hoping, we became one generation. As the firefighters and police officers fought their way into the inferno, we became one gender. As we fell on our knees in prayer for strength, we became one faith. As we whispered and shouted words of encouragement, we spoke one language. As we gave our blood in lines a mile long, we became one body. As we mourned together the great loss, we became one family. As we cried tears of grief and loss, we became one soul. As we retell with pride the sacrifices of heroes, we become one people. Is this not God's design and desire for us? That we become one with each other and one with Him? The losses of September 11th were public ones for all to see. Most of life's losses and needs can be kept hidden if we want to keep them so. But admitting our need, acknowledging our pain, our brokenness, and our sin is the first step toward receiving God's miraculous redemption, God's wondrous salvation, God's incomparable love. We're going to sing now, and I'd like to invite you, if during this hymn, if you feel moved to do so, you may want to come forward to the altar of the church. It's a special place. It's a powerful place. And there pray, offer to God some sorrow, some pain, some brokenness. You may want to pray silently in yourself. You may want to bring someone with you. You may want one of your pastors to pray with you. We'll be glad to do anything you'd like. But feel free to come forward as we sing a very powerful hymn, and one that speaks directly to what I'm saying to you today and directly to the gospel lesson, just as I am without one plea.